From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello, I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, I'm going to confess to a certain practice when I operate single sideband.
Oh, my.
Well, no, nothing that we can't talk about over the air here. But, I just run a 100-watt station. I don't have a linear amplifier. And I know that if I'm in a pile-up situation, that I'm up against some stiff competition. And many times I will reach over to my transceiver and I will toggle on the speech processing function just to try to give myself a little extra boost, a tiny bit of an edge. Am I just kidding myself?
No, you're not. That actually makes quite a difference. There are two related topics we can talk about here, and there's speech equalization, which can also help, and speech processing. And it used to be they were done in different boxes, which would be outside of the radio, and you can still do that. You can still buy boxes that do both of those things, which we'll talk about. But because they're kind of separate functions, I'm going to talk about them separately. And the first one I'll talk about is equalization, just because that's the way my mind works. That's sort of what happens first on the way through the signal path from the microphone.
That's true, yeah.
And speech equalization is really kind of a tone control on your microphone. Now, every microphone has its own frequency response characteristics, and every person has their own frequency response characteristics. If you take a random microphone and a random person, you'll get kind of random speech characteristics over the air, which may be just fine, and that I don't know if that's what we're doing here. But
well, kind of. We have the same microphones, but otherwise, sure.
So I guess a couple of things about this. One is you can change the way your voice sounds, either because the microphone characteristics are not appropriate to your voice or appropriate to real life, or because your voice is one that you don't think carries very well. So you can make your voice come out sounding like Darth Vader or Donald Duck or Daffy Duck or somebody if you want. Donald Duck can happen even without speech processing on single sideband, as we all know. Basically, you can change the characteristics. Why would you want to do that? Well, some people believe that they sound better with a little bit of a boost on one end of the spectrum or the other. And another point is some parts of the spectrum seem to be able to punch through better than others. Now, some people have actually built that into microphones. If you look at the many microphone manufacturers will actually show the response curves of their microphones as part of their web page or whatever. And for a long time, some of the very popular amateur microphones had a strong emphasis in the range above 1,000 hertz. Like the typical voice response that's a communications channel goes from about 300 hertz to 3,000 hertz max, and usually a little less in sideband. So some manufacturers would offer a microphone designed to do what you want to do, which is punch through a pileup by moving the response to the maximum amount of response to around 1,000 hertz to 2,000 hertz range. They'd actually have a boost in that range of, depending on the microphone, 10 to 20 dB, which is significant.
Mm-hmm.
And why does that help? Well, because whatever power you have is distributed across that whole frequency range, and you might as well put that power into the range that gets through in the most effective way. So even though it might not sound like you, by boosting that range of the audio spectrum, you can actually punch through the QRM a little better than if you had a flat response, let's say. So that's one of the reasons people do that. And interestingly, because speech equalization is now so commonly available in transceivers, many of those same microphone manufacturers are now offering mics with a flat response, with the idea that you use the speech processor in or the speech equalizer in your radio to adjust the response to the way you want it. So if you have a radio that doesn't have that, be very careful about what microphone you buy.
Yes.
So you may want to go back to one of the earlier types that has a peaked response that will help your communication. So some microphones are designed for rag chewing, and they have a response that sounds pleasant to the other person. And that's not necessarily the best response to stand out in a crowd. Somebody with a very higher pitched response may be able to punch through better. So that's one of the things you can do. The other thing you can do is you can just compensate for a microphone to make it sound the way you want. I don't know if you listen to, and you've been in the broadcast business, some of the radio stations have people that boost the low end up so high. I mean, they're trying to sound like James Earl Jones. Is that what I mean?
Yes.
With a very low voice, and you know, just because they think that's neat. And that's fine. You know, if you want to do that, if you want people to think that's the way you sound, that's fine if you think that comes through better. And it does sound interesting on the you do kind of, they do kind of stand out on the air. Typically, you can adjust whatever range you want to have higher or lower response. As an example, my radio has a 8-band equalizer built into it. And the bands are centered with an octave relationship. So there's a band centered at 50 hertz, then 100 hertz, 200, 400, up to 3200 hertz. And any of those ranges I can boost by 16 decibels or cut by 16 decibels. So I can go through and adjust how my mic sounds on the air. Oh, I have multiple mics, so you know, depending on whether I'm using my headset or a desk mic, I may change it. Depending on whether I'm trying to break pileups or talk to my friends, I can change it. If I did it to break pileups, they might not recognize who I am. And I don't need to break a pileup if I'm on the club net, you know, that kind of thing. So I can adjust the effectiveness of my mic and my voice to meet the needs that I have at the time. Some radios do them differently. I've seen them with just three bands, effectively a low, medium, and high with adjustable ranges. And that works just as well, really. I mean, I think you get down to the nits of between 50 and 100 hertz, that's all low.
Yes.
So, you know, obviously you have more flexibility if you have more increments, but I don't know that it makes that much difference. It's probably not a reason to pick a radio, but it is a good idea to pick a radio that has that kind of adjustment to it so that you can set up your microphone and to be compatible with your voice and meet the needs that you have on the air.
Now, we've been talking about equalization so far, but let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about compression or processing.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Actually, I have more to talk about equalization a little bit. But we'll,
okay, no, that's fine.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime. And we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hands ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back. And you said you had more to say about equalization.
Just a little bit. I guess the one thing I wanted to mention was, as far as I can tell, the only way to set this up is to monitor your signal when you do it and listen to yourself the way others will hear you. Now, many of the mic manufacturers do have recommendations on equalization settings for their microphones for different radios, which you might find helpful. But still, if you have a way to monitor your signal, and everybody should, best to listen to the way it sounds on the air and adjust it while you're listening to it. Now, I found one other trick that works very well. If you have a club member or friend who's a ham and is also a broadcast studio engineer or a recording engineer, meet them on the air. I did that once, and I was amazed at how quickly he was able to have me set up all my different octave bands so that it sounded great, and I've never had it work any better than that. So that's another thing you can try, too. But try different things and see what you think, and then you can, you know, and record the settings, and then for different operating modes and so forth, you can do the same thing. And by the way, you can also do that on receive, which can help your receive signal noise ratio by getting rid of the high end buzz and so forth sometimes. So depending on your radio, you may have that kind of capability. So that's all I was going to talk about equalization.
Equalization. But now then there's compression.
Yes.
Or processing, which is a different animal entirely.
Absolutely. Processing, while the equalization was kind of a frequency response kind of thing. The processing is an amplitude process. Recognize that one of the things about single sideband transmission is that if you have a 100-watt single sideband transmitter, that means it can handle voice peaks up to 100 watts. But your voice doesn't peak that often. Most of the time, your voice is at intermediate levels or fairly low. In fact, if you look at it on an averaging meter, you'll find out that your 100-watt signal will actually average at 10 to 15 watts. So you say, gee, I'm not getting what I'm paying for here. And some people try to fix that by cranking up their mic gain until it's always up at 100 watts. Well, that doesn't work. That completely distorts your signal. Nobody can tell what you're saying. And people up and down the band hear your splatter and try to figure out who you are, and they'll come burn down your house if you're not careful. I probably shouldn't say that. You may want to cut that.
You thought that, but we're not recommending that.
No,
we're not.
That's right. Yes. That's what my lawyer says. Anyway, but there are ways to have speech processing help you meet the objective you have, which is to get the maximum benefit out of your transceiver that you can. And you probably don't want to get the maximum out. I mean, what speech compression does in speech processing is it's like an automatic gain control on your receiver in a way. What it does is it takes the low-level signals. When you're talking quietly, it raises the level up, so it gives you
that
more.
Was very strange. Can you do that again?
Probably not. Anyway, it tries to equalize the level of your signal or kind of boost up the signal so that it gives you more average power. And it can do two or three times the average power that it can do. Actually, it can do a lot more. The problem is it's a matter of dynamic range. What that means is you're not going to increase the peak power because the radio can only do 100 watts. So if you bring up the low end, what you've done is you've effectively decreased the dynamic range. And that means the inflections in your voice will be less obvious. And if you see, every now and then you hear somebody that's got it really cranked up, and it sounds like they're just, the amplitude never changes. I don't know if you ever noticed this. It just, they're always right at the top. And people sound very abnormal that way.
Very strange, yes.
So you want to avoid going too far. And most equipment manuals, ham radio transceiver equipment manuals, have detailed instructions on how to set up both the mic gain and the compression level, which will put you in the right place kind of thing. But again, also in this mode, you want to make sure that you do the adjustments while you're listening to your signal in a monitor, either the monitor that's built into your radio or with another receiver. And the other thing that's important is make sure you look at where your meter is swinging as you do that, because all of this assumes a certain distance from your microphone. So if you back off a foot from your microphone, it would get back over here.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me as well. So, you know, it won't be as effective. So, and if you shout at your microphone, that's not too good either usually. So you have to kind of put all this stuff together and kind of train yourself. That's one of the advantages, I think, about a headset, which I use often in contesting, is the microphone is always in the same place with respect to my head, as long as I put it on the same way, and the same distance from my mouth. So that makes it easier to do that part of it.
Now, what about, you know, and this may date me a bit, but the differences between audio processing compression and RF speech processing. Remember when there used to be outboard boxes that would do one or the other?
Yes, absolutely right. For reasons that I can't immediately come up with, it's more effective if you base your processing by using a sample of the actual RF signal than just dealing with the audio signal. But I think the modern digital signal processing and transceivers are effectively equivalent to the RF processing that we used to talk about.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's another part of this, too, that you have to watch out about with compression. And that is, because the compression tries to build up your weak signals to a higher average power, during the times that you're not talking, it's trying to make you louder. Well, what is it going to hear? It's not going to hear you because you're not talking. But it's going to take whatever sound is around, like the fan in your amplifier or your cat meowing or the TV in the next room, and it's going to raise them up. So now they're taking over your transmitter. So you're rebroadcasting Saturday Night Live or whatever is on your television in the next room, which is probably not a good thing. You have to be careful about that. Now, there's a way to fix that some transceivers have what's called a noise gate, and that will set the minimum level that the transmitter will actually deal with. If you're not talking and you have a background noise like an amplifier fan, you can set the threshold of this so it's above that noise, and then the transmitter will not boost that up. So that's another thing to keep in mind. That's part of speech processing also, but it's not in every transceiver, but some have it. And it's
well, that would be helpful. Yeah. When I was in broadcasting, of course, we had compressors. They may still be out there on the market, Optimods. And you're right. You had to be careful because the expression at the time was that it sounded as though it was trying to suck the entire studio into the microphone. Anytime you stopped talking, you'd hear this. Yeah. So I'm very painfully familiar with that.
Yep. Well, it's a good thing to keep in mind, and you have to watch out for. So if you have a howly cat, you don't want to have your compression turned up too high.
And I do.
Ah, yes. Well, I've heard that about you.
Well, is it time for a question, Joel?
Sure, why not?
Okay. Kenneth, KD4HQQ, is asking, I have read that an HF radio can use a light bulb as a makeshift antenna. How is that possible? We had an article years ago in QST about this.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, you can find out good things in that magazine. I recommend it highly. Actually, what it was, in the 50s and 60s, which is when I started out in this, so it's quite possible it also was done earlier, incandescent light bulbs were often used as dummy loads or simulated antennas for testing transmitters. I think that the two things put an end to that. One is Heathkit came out with a relatively inexpensive cantenna, which was
a cantenna.
$29 yes. Gallon paint can that you filled up with transformer oil or mineral oil from your drugstore. And everybody looked at you funny when you went into your
drugstore.
Yes,
that was always embarrassing. Yes.
Is that like a gallon of mineral oil, please? Oh, my. Poor man. I actually did that. And I actually have one, and it still has the original mineral oil from 1967 or whenever it was. But anyway, that worked very well and provided a 50-ohm non-inductive resistor that was cooled by the oil and could handle up to a kilowatt at that time, the maximum that we could. Actually, that was the maximum input, so we could only put out about 750 watts in those days for some amount of time. You couldn't do it forever. You'd boil the oil and blow up the can. But anyway, it served as a good load. The thing about light bulbs that was satisfying was you just built this little transmitter, and you put this light bulb on the output, and you tuned the transmitter, and the light bulb lit up, and you could actually see the RF going out and lighting up the light bulb. And you could bring your mother over and say, look over my transmitter. I can do that with a switch over here. Right? So what's the big deal? But it kind of worked, and there was a fundamental problem with it. And the fundamental problem was a light bulb's resistance changes with the temperature or the intensity of it or whatever, however you want to look at it. The other thing is, even when it's on at full illumination, it isn't particularly a match for 50 ohms. You can use Ohm's law and figure this out real quickly. A 100-watt bulb, when it's at full brightness, has a resistance of 144 ohms, for example. 60 watts, 240 ohms. This is not exactly a match to a 50-ohm system. Now, the good news was, in the days that we were doing this, we had Pi network transmitters, vacuum tube transmitters with Pi network outputs. And you could adjust it to match anything up to typically 600 ohms. So it didn't bother us. As you change the power, the light bulb would get brighter. The impedance would change. You'd tune it some more, and it would get more bright and so forth. So it was okay for that. But now with our current transmitters that only want to see a 50-ohm load, and I guess you could use an antenna tuner, but that's a lot of knobs to twiddle just to find out.
Just to light a light bulb.
Yeah, exactly. Say, why was I doing this again? They want to see a 50-ohm load, and if you give them 144 ohm load, they'll shut down the transmitter or back off the transmitter significantly. That's almost a 3-to-1 SWR, so it's not going to like that. So they just are not usable as much for that as they were. We used to use them in the two-way radio business. We had a little box with a light bulb in it and a variable capacitor. The other thing is they're inductors. If you looked at a light bulb filament, it looks like a little coil.
Yeah.
So if you use it at 50 megahertz, it's going to not only be the wrong resistive value, but it's going to have a series inductance in it. So we had a capacitor that could tune out the inductance. We'd test out 100-watt VHF transmitters on the bench with this as a dummy load, and it kind of worked. But we'd tune it. We'd have a bird watt meter on the way to the dummy load box, and we'd tune for minimum reflected power, and the light bulb would light up, and we'd say, oh, this one can go back in the truck.
But unlike the cantenna, the light bulb, lousy antenna that it is, radiates at least somewhat.
Well, that's true. I think all dummy loads do somewhat. I mean, I have a funny story.
Everybody has made a contact on a dummy load.
That's right. I won't tell my funny story because the person who was involved might be listening. But I've actually heard someone about 35 miles away getting ready for a skid that we had, practicing code into his dummy load. And he fessed up when I told him afterwards. Now, I'm not sure exactly what kind of dummy load he had and how it was hooked up to his radio. It depends on how good the shielding is of your coax, which is also a function of how tight the connectors are and so forth. But there will be some escape from the shield, and that gets out, and you do have radiation. Everything radiates a little bit.
So the bottom line is, for Kenneth at least, that, yeah, a light bulb can be a makeshift antenna, just a really, really poor one.
Yes, I guess so. Well, and I don't think it was ever really intended as an antenna. It was intended as a dummy antenna. I guess the British call it, I think, a phantom antenna.
Yes.
So there's always has to be one. You can't do all your transmitter testing on the air, or people get upset with you. So it's best to have keep your signals in the house when you're working on the transmitter.
Well, you could make the case, could you not, that in a way a light bulb is an antenna, but just for terahertz signals?
That's true. Yeah, for optical communication, it's a lot of lenses.
Dandy
in front of it.
Antenna. That's
yep,
right.
That's right.
That's right. Well, thank you, Joel. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.